step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A little sad. It's not snowing. It snowed all day yesterday and night, at least down here. You talking about standing correct? You talking about eating my words? You talking about eating a big old dose of, a big old plate of crow? I laughed at the notion of the S word. Laughed over the weekend. Ha! Snow in November in Nashville. Give me a break. Well, it was awesome yesterday. I loved it. But sunny today, at least down here in Smyrna and Rutherford County. That's me, Darren McFarland. Willie Donick is over in East Nashville. Hopefully it's sunny over there. Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue. And Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It was still snowing. I went to bed last night.
Yeah, you too.
All day and all night. It was awesome.
It was. And see, I'm glad that it put you in a good mood. I was hoping that maybe it could put Mike Vrabel in a good mood, but it clearly didn't. That didn't work because I was in a good mood and Willie was in a good mood and Elijah was in a good mood. You know, the snow just makes you feel good.
I think so. I mean, some people don't like it. But
now it was cold.
It was cold.
I ran some errands after the show with my dad, and we get out of the car, and he goes, "Damn, when did winter get here?" that's basically how I felt too. It just kind of boom.
Well, right, we had our first team get together at an indoor facility last night since our season ended, and yeah, getting out of the car at 5:45 last night, yikes. It was like, okay, all right. Good thing we're indoors today. It was just downright cold. I think last night's low was, what, 27, something like that?
I made a game-changing decision, though, for sleep, because my room gets cold. My room is very cold in the winter. I have invested in an electric blanket. Absolute game changer. I'm a whole different person now.
You might want to invest in some insulation, maybe on the walls or in the attic or below. I don't know if you're on a slab, if you've got a...
Yeah, but, you know, the electric blanket was cheaper.
Crawl space. Well, it is cheaper. You're right. But, I mean, insulation would help, Chase.
It would.
They can blow it in now. I mean, you can just, blow it in. I don't know what's going on. Maybe you have faulty windows. I don't know.
It could be.
Cold air's coming in through the cracks. I don't know. Could be.
But I'm good now. I got that blanket. I was like, hey, I woke up this morning like I'm never leaving this bed. that was awesome.
Yeah, well, cool. Very good. Well, he's been
awfully quiet.
No, it was
warm. It wasn't cool.
Willie, what's going on? You're awfully quiet. Are you cold?
Well, I am. I'm thawing out. I did a morning run this morning, and
how many layers did you have on?
Oh, I had a lot. I broke out the layers.
Six?
Well, I had the undershirt, the Under Armour, that tight-fit undershirt. That's a good first layer.
It's a good one.
Threw a T-shirt on over that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went with the hoodie on top of that.
Oh, okay. Three. That's actually no thermal, no flannel, nothing like that?
Does the T-shirt
flannel.
Do anything, though?
Who do you know that runs in flannel?
Well, when it's 27 degrees, I think everything is okay, acceptable.
You know, it was funny. I was watching... I know you guys will think this is weird that I do this, and I told you this before, but I love to listen to old broadcasts while I'm jogging. And a recent one I did was I went and listened to a Pat Summerall, John Madden game from way back. Oh, nice. I was just wanting to hear some John Madden. And sure enough, it's a game at Shea Stadium, and the temperature, like the wind chill factor is -5 or something. It's like 15 degrees out there. And they're explaining how the Jets... this is the early 80s, are all wearing pantyhose because they thought that was the best way to stay warm. So John Madden was down in the locker room before the game, and he's getting this story that he's going to share on the pregame show. And they said, well, here's a package right here if you want to try him out. And so John Madden put the pantyhose on and explains that in the open to Pat Summerall, that he gave the package to Pat Summerall, and he said, I just decided to go ahead and, since it's cold up here, it's an open-air press box at Shea Stadium, he said, I just put the pantyhose on. So maybe that's what I should have done for the run this morning.
Well, there you go. Now you've got, if you're going to do one tomorrow, I'm sure it'll be cold. There you go. You can try that. Give us a report back.
Okay.
Tell us how that goes.
By the way, probably better than flannel.
Maybe. Probably. Maybe. We didn't bring this up yesterday. We had a lot of ground to cover in 4 hours. And, of course, then you throw on Mike Vrabel's press conference, which, you know, then sidetracked us even more. I mean, there was a lot on our plate yesterday. Speaking of broadcasters, we didn't mention that. I have not followed up to see what the story was. Why was Tirico doing the game Sunday night and not Al Michaels? Why did the crews, why were they different?
Well, that's been how they've done it all year long. Al Michaels, at this stage of his career, they announced it before the season, which games he wasn't going to do.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes.
It's to especially limit on his a travel. Week where there's
I guess
a heavy
I haven't
schedule.
Watched all the Sunday night games this year then.
Yeah, he's already doing... done one or two other ones.
Oh.
It was predetermined that Tirico and Tony Dungy would do a handful of the games to limit Al Michaels' travel and things like that.
Well, because of COVID and Al's on the West Coast, it just was to kind of keep him on the West Coast. So,
So
Tirico was handling it. Yeah, he did a couple games earlier in the year, but they've had a lot of West Coast games. I mean, they've been in Seattle or San Francisco or L.A. and Vegas, and you know they've been out that way. So Al's been able to do it. But yeah, that's why.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just watched all the coverage leading up to Nashville SC kickoff, and then once I realized it was the Bears, I knew how that was going to play out, so I, you know, made sure I watched Nashville SC because the Bears are a fraud, you know, because they're terrible. They're not good. Like I said, five weeks ago, they're not good. They're a horrible, horrible football team. So I just was noticing all that. They got all the whole lineup was all jumbled around. I was like, what is going on? I guess I have not watched all the Sunday night games this year, or at least I haven't paid attention to them. Maybe
How
I've had them on
possibly
mute.
Possibly not watch every Sunday night game, Darren.
Well,
what's wrong with you?
Well, in these times, you would think that I would have watched every.
I'm going to say my batting average is pretty high on the Sunday night.
I don't really have a lot
compared
of excuses
to the past with the travel of the NHL schedule.
Right.
But yeah. So
we usually have a built-in excuse. But, you know,
Tirico and Dungy have been doing the Notre Dame games as well. I think they're a very good team. I enjoy listening to that duo. The certain guys, you throw them together, they just sound really good. I just think those guys do a very good job. That's a good team.
Yeah, yeah. I like them too. They've done a good job with it. I have a question for you, Darren.
Yep.
In your assessment of the Bears and them being frauds, do you include Matt Nagy, the head coach, as being overrated in that?
Well, it's an icy slope there. Chase, I can use that reference today because I don't know how much of it is, you know, Trubisky was not his pick.
No.
So Trubisky, it's very clear, he's just a bust, right? He's just not very good. And Nick Foles, as I've said every single year, is just like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He is not a starting quarterback in the league. He is a tremendous backup in small spots. He is not a 16-game-a-season starter. He's not. So they've got poor, poor quarterback play. But I don't know who all is to blame. It's like the Philadelphia situation. You start to, you know, everybody's – look, they're, to me, when I see Philadelphia, I blame the front office. I blame the front office way more than I do the head coach because everybody is pounding – the head coach and the quarterback. By the way, it seeped into the broadcast last night. I'm sure you guys saw that. I mean, it is.
But they won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. Like, how mad can you be? It's like
it doesn't matter.
It's Philadelphia, dude.
I know.
Years ago
it does. I know it's
is
Philadelphia.
An eternity in the NFL.
I get it, but it wasn't that long ago. It was what, two seasons ago?
3 years ago.
Okay, 3 seasons ago, they won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Yeah.
They went to the playoffs last year, did they not?
They did.
They beat the Bears in a playoff game.
They're
two
in the
years
NFC
ago.
East. All you need to do is get to 7 or 8.
If you have a pulse, you're right. I get it. But it's not like they're in this decade-long swoon. Like, it's been a while. The Bears had the year where they had the double doink. They lost to the Eagles, ironically. So they've had more misery. So the Eagles fans, you need to get over it a little bit. Like, you can't be great every year. It's frustrating as heck to watch. I get it. I do think that the teams that are the craziest to watch, like, if you care about the Bears and the Eagles, that's got to be excruciating to watch every week because they just can't get it right.
Well, did you guys see DK Metcalf after the game, his post-game presser? He didn't help the situation.
I guess you guys haven't seen it. No, I didn't.
He did something like wave goodbye to the fans when there weren't very many fans there.
No. That's not what he. That's not what
I
stoked
read
the fire.
That there were some jabs.
Oh well, first of all, Jim Schwartz came up to him, and I think Jim was trying to pay him a compliment, but said, "You know, you're a tremendous player. You know, I used to coach Calvin Johnson. You're not there yet, but you're well on your way." And DK Metcalf was like, he kind of took it as, you know, forget you, man.
Took it as an insult.
Yeah, he took it more. I think he took more of a slight, but that's not even what set all this in motion. DK Metcalf fanned the flames by saying, yeah, I came in this game very inspired because, remember, this team passed on me in the draft. And, you know, remember they took, what did they take, Jalen Reagor in the second round who hasn't done anything?
Yeah.
Jalen Reagor, was he their first round pick? He may have been their first round. I think he was their first round pick, and he has not done anything. This year, of course, Carson Wentz has been absolutely awful. But I don't think DK Metcalf, you know, helped the situation by saying, yeah, this team passed on me. So I was pretty inspired to let them know, let them not forget that they passed on me in the draft when they could have taken me. Which I would say to DK Metcalf, dude, it all worked out. You're playing for the Seahawks. Would you rather be playing for the Eagles or would you rather be playing for the Seahawks? Would you rather live in Seattle or would you rather live in Philadelphia?
Are you talking about J.J. Arcega Whiteside?
Yes, that guy too. So that's the two receivers they've taken. So when did that guy, when was he taken?
He was
he the first round?
No.
Second round?
Second.
So he was the second round pick, and he's been, nobody even knows who he is, right? He's a complete
They took Miles Sanders and J.J. Arcega Whiteside four picks apart in the second round.
Yeah, and he's a bust. He's an absolute bust. Yeah, but they also took... Didn't they take Reagor this year? In the first, I mean, they've been throwing darts at receivers, and it hasn't worked out. Wasn't he their first round pick this year?
Yeah, Reagor was this year.
Yeah, so they've taken Reagor this year in the first round, and they took that guy who nobody even knows the year Metcalf was drafted in the second round.
Reagor was 21st overall.
Is that guy caught a ball? I mean, who even knows who he is?
I guess that worked out well for DK Metcalf. I'll always remember this in the draft. It might have been 2003, whatever draft Ben Roethlisberger was in. They had his family sitting right there, and he slipped a little lower. Like, I think people thought he would be in the first three or four picks. I don't remember what pick the Steelers had, but like every time somebody passed on him, they would show the Roethlisberger table, and there was this huge disappointment. Like, his dad was like crushed, like the world was going to end. And finally, he gets picked by the Steelers. It's like, dude. You got picked by the Steelers. It worked out, you know.
It did.
Sometimes things work out. It doesn't. So don't worry about how you got there. Sometimes.
You know what, though, Willie? I don't fault anybody. Like, going back to our Vrabel conversation, I don't fault anybody. However they motivate themselves is look, I don't care because I do it in what we do. Okay, we all have our ways of how we motivate ourselves. Yeah. Whether it's if I'm coaching or if I'm doing the show, like, we all have to do what works for us, right? Okay, and I have no fault in that. Whatever gets your juices flowing, whatever gets your competitive juices flowing, it doesn't matter. If that works for you, then that's cool. What I scoff at and what, you know, gets me going is when these players and these coaches, and this is yet again another prime example, to act like they don't read, you know, what's being written. They don't know what's being said about them. They pretend they're in a bubble. And, yes, at times they are in a bubble, but they still know what's going on outside the bubble. They do read that stuff. There is such thing as bulletin board because they always try to play it off like bulletin board material. That's so ridiculous. So, you know, we don't need, you know, inspiration. We don't need motivation to play this game. Baloney, okay? Everybody does it, and it's okay. And it's okay for you to admit it. It's just like Vrabel yesterday. I didn't have a problem with how you described him. Willie, I think you're right. I think that's – the guy is just wired differently. He definitely beats to his own drum, and whatever gets him going and however he thinks the mindset he needs to be a good coach was the same thing he had to do to survive 14 years as a player in the league. But with that being said, one, don't tell us you don't know what's going on, because clearly yesterday we know. We listened to the press conference. He's been harboring stuff. He knows what's been written about him. He couldn't wait to talk about it. So just don't tell us. Don't insult us, one, by pretending like you don't know who past players are, okay, when you've been around the pro game basically your entire adult life. And two, you know, when players and coaches tell you they don't know what's being said on sports talk radio or they don't know what's being written about them, it's all baloney. Don't listen to them. Don't buy that. It's false. It's completely false. They do know. That's the only thing that bothers me. But, you know, going back to the Mike Vrabel thing, DK Metcalf, look at it. He's a tremendous player. Think about it. We're sitting here going, dude, you made out. You went to Seattle over Philly. But he doesn't think like that. He's
right,
like,
but
everybody
it's the same
who
thing.
Passed
it's,
on
Vrabel,
me,
Vrabel
I'm going to make
Metcalf,
them pay.
That what they do, exactly. That's what drives them. And that's
yes.
that's all right.
And I'm
I mean,
fine
if,
with it.
If that's
okay.
what you want to be your engine, if that's what you need to get you to the right place, okay. All right.
You know how many times people have told me stuff in this business over 20-plus years that I've used as motivation? My whole career. That's okay. It's fine. You know, people say things, and then you go, really? Okay. I'll show you. Chase, I know you've talked about it. I mean, we all do it in whatever, you know,
sure.
whatever we – whatever walk of life we do, whatever profession, anybody out there listening, we've all done stuff to motivate ourselves. I mean, it's okay. But just don't play it off. Don't act like it doesn't exist or you don't know anything about it. That's what drives me crazy, because you do. And it's okay to admit it.
And I've openly talked about it, that, you know, my journey hasn't been the easiest one to get to this show and to where I am now, but I use it all as motivation. And I've kind of, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not going to ever get complacent, so I'm going to remember. I'm going to remember the journey. I'm going to remember, like, being told, yeah, probably not going to happen for you. Okay, yeah, cool, yeah. I'm going to remind myself of that every day. But that's what works for me. And so I agree. Don't all of a sudden act like you don't do that when everybody knows that you do. And it's fine. It's fine to have that chip on your shoulder. You know, we worked with D-Mace. D-Mace still
to this day.
Yeah. I mean, he still has that
burning, that whatever makes him tick, the way he's wired today. And D-Mace is what, mid-40s?
Yeah,
I mean, he's been out of the league for what, 5 years, 6 years, seven years now?
Try 10.
Has it really been 10?
Yeah.
Wow, he's been out of the league 10 years.
I think 2011 was his last
you're
year.
Right. I mean, if he's in his mid-40s, he's been out of the league 10 years, and you wouldn't know it if you're around D-Mace. He still has that – but that's how he – and we believe on this show he is a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
He should be a Hall of Famer. He should be in Canton. That's what drove him. That's his motivation. That's how that guy is wired. That's how that guy had the career that he did, because, one, look how slow it took. That's what's even more impressive, because he wasn't getting the opportunities. You don't think that wasn't eating him up? Well, just ask him. He'll tell you.
Yeah.
I mean,
because
it
still does. I mean,
the
whole – I can remember, whether it was on this show or the morning show, the rants that he would go on about – you know, I was a fourth-round pick, you know, being a fourth-round pick, and he would always throw that out there, and because he was, but that was a part of his motivation of like, oh, I'm just a kick returner. Oh, okay. All right. Watch this. And I've always used the phrase, I'm not going to prove you wrong. I'm just going to prove me right. And that's exactly what D-Mace did. So, and that, a lot of athletes, a lot of people – use that as motivation, like, oh, okay, watch. I'm going to be right in this at the end of the day. I'm going to be right. Just watch.
Yeah.
Now I'm fired up even
more. Who wants to go play a game? Who wants to go?
Let's go.
Let's go do this. Let's go hire Vanderbilt's coach. We've got this figured out.
Darren, have you seen the press release from the Nashville Predators yet? Could you read that for us? Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. It's your favorite player. He's been loaned to Team Russia for the World Juniors selection camp.
Yeah, I see players being loaned every day.
Igor Afanasyev.
Sure, yeah. Awesome. He's going to play for Russia?
Yes.
Yes. They get paid in rubles.
I'm excited. Willie, you brought him up a few times. I'm excited to see him, you know, whenever he gets here. I've heard good
junior,
things.
So I was going to say, will he be playing with Mr. Radulov?
No, it's the juniors.
Yeah, it's the juniors. Oh, well. I think we should go hire Vanderbilt's football coach. We've got the right mindset. In fact, we can help Candace Story Lee. We had Chris Lee on yesterday, and we're going to have on because typically we have Derek Mason on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock, and we're going to keep that tradition and keep it going by talking to the interim right now, who is, of course, who was the OC, but Todd Fitch is the interim. So we're going to talk to him at 1 o'clock, and then Mitch Light will follow. But we didn't really have a chance to follow up because after Chris Lee was the Mike Vrabel press conference, and so we didn't really have a chance to kind of go down that road. I know we're going to have Joe Thomas here at the bottom of the hour, so we're looking forward to that from the NFL Network. But we didn't get a chance to get into it because then the Mike Vrabel thing happened, and then so we got all over the place. But what do we think, as we've just got a couple minutes here, and we could talk about it a little bit later, of some of the names you're starting to see out there floating around? What would be the right hire in – Willie, I'll start with you. In your mind, what's the right hire for Vanderbilt? What should they be looking for? I'm not asking you what they're going to be looking – what, in your opinion, what should they be looking for?
I'll be honest. The list that has been put out there by a number of different people, I really like. I think the mistake they made last time was I think they had Derek Mason in their mind. And I admit, I think I fell into this trap too. The defensive coordinator at Stanford, based on what Stanford had been doing, sounded extremely attractive to me, especially when you look at Stanford's defense. They were doing some amazing things. They were shutting down the Oregons and other teams when other teams couldn't do it. And I think maybe they almost had it predetermined. And, you know, as we grade Derek Mason in historical context, it wasn't all bad. You know, two bowl games in 6 years is heck of a lot better batting average than just about every Vanderbilt coach. But I'll tell you, I really like the profile of Will Healy. I like the profile of Clark Lee. Those two guys, and I love the wild card of Jeff Fisher. I would love to sit down if I'm Candace Story Lee and just hear Jeff Fisher make the sales pitch as to why he thinks he can do it, why he wants it. Because I do think it's pretty obvious that he's interested. Like, he really is truly wanting to take a shot at this thing. And that's worth something. Like, that's worth hearing him out, even if he ends up not being the guy you settle on. I think Joe Rexroad wrote a great piece on Will Healy. We've been nothing but impressed with Will Healy from the day he got hired at Austin Peay. We were talking to him before he even started down the road of reviving the program the way he did.
He was barely legal to drink.
But his very first interview, you're like, man, this guy is engaging. This guy is... You know, so you envision that Vanderbilt can use that. Both Will Healy and Jeff Fisher have that charm, that excitement, the enthusiasm that's going to resonate beyond the Vanderbilt fan base, right? You just think in terms of Nashville, that's a big thing, right? Grabbing people's attention, being somebody that's easy to root for.
That's what they need.
That is a big thing that they need. I like those guys. Clark Lee is interesting just having played there. And knowing what it's like to play there and then going to different places. He was a baseball player, which is really intriguing to me on the college level too. So interesting perspective. So sometimes you're like worried, who's going to really want this job? You know, who's interested? Are the right guys interested in this job this year? I think they may have lucked out in terms of who's available because I read all these guys. I can see like Huff down at Alabama, who happened to be on James Franklin's staff. He's been a lot of places. He's got some impressive credentials. You know, there's another guy that has a connection to the school.
He's a big-time recruiter.
That's very, very intriguing, right? Maybe the best in the business. Yep. So I just love – I don't say you can't go wrong because you can always go wrong, but I just like what all of these candidates bring to the table.
Well, you can go wrong and not hire anybody on that list.
Well, right.
That's the list that they're going to be going off of.
Well, I think what a lot of those guys have in common is they want the job.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like you got to convince. Remember, when they tried to get Gus Malzahn, they had to really sell and try to convince Gus Malzahn that you could win here.
Oh,
and they put on
others.
A huge pitch.
Wasn't Chad
but Gus
Morris
Malzahn
sure.
was
yes.
Ultimately, Gus Malzahn was not interested.
Yes.
Right.
Right? So Tennessee has run into that problem. You can name probably two dozen coaches.
We don't have enough time.
We don't have enough time.
To go over the Tennessee
They
list.
Made their pitch, and they didn't want it.
Yep.
Right? I think these guys, what they have a connection to the school or to the city, and they see something here. That's so much different than before. We didn't know who James Franklin was, right? But now you're starting with a list of people that look like they would be interested, connected, and engaged in wanting to make it happen at a unique place. Where if you don't have that mindset, you're not going to succeed here.
The big thing for me, and everything you just said is I agree with, but the biggest thing for me is for somebody like Clark Lea, I don't think that'd be a bad hire. I think he's certainly going to be in the mix, but he's going to be coming from a program where they've done a lot of winning and they've had a lot of those resources. So he's been in a good spot. Somebody like a Will Healy that had to rebuild a program at Austin Peay has then gone to Charlotte and trying to build that up. Somebody like Jeff Fisher that's been out of coaching and just wants to get back in, but has also seen what it takes to build a fan base, to move a team twice. He's done it twice, and to have to kind of start all over. I think that's what Vanderbilt really needs. They need those type coaches that have had to get dirt under their fingernails because of just a unique situation, because as we've all said, this is a unique job. And they're going to be hungry. You know, I think Will Healy and Jeff Fisher would be equally as hungry to get in here and to take this job and to just give everything they have. Not that the others wouldn't, but just because of their past experiences, that's something that I look at just because of what kind of job Vanderbilt is.
I think that's a great first question is, you know, do you want this job? Why do you want this job? Like, A, you got to understand this job, and B, you want this job. You're not saying, I'll take a head coaching job. I want this job. Jamie Chadwell is an interesting one, too, because I think he's going to be a hot name, right? Coastal Carolina, he's jumping on the radar. He's that sure. hot name. We know through history and coaching searches, the hot name doesn't always pan out at the next place, right? Sometimes it does. You grab the guy on the rise, and you're like, man, remember we got this guy before anybody knew who he was. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but I'm wondering if Jamie Chadwell really is into Vanderbilt. You know, does he want this job? That's what I would have to find out about him, but he's an intriguing name.
All right, we'll come back. Joe Thomas from the NFL Network, former Brown offensive lineman. We'll talk to him next. Titans and Browns on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donnick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ravens Steelers got moved again. It'll be tomorrow, shortly after we get off the air. I think kickoff is at like 2:40
yep.
our time. This game was scheduled to be the nightcap game, the third game on Thanksgiving night. And we're sitting here on Tuesday morning still wondering if the Ravens and the Steelers are going to play this game. And then the Ravens, of course, have to move their next game with the Cowboys because they were supposed to be the Thursday night game. Obviously, that's not going to happen. Now it's going to be a Tuesday night game. We're going to carry that on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. So Ravens and Cowboys will be next Tuesday night. So a week from today, kickoff is set at 7:05. So it's going to be a crazy, crazy week for the Baltimore Ravens.
The NFL will have played a game this season on every day of the week because yeah. The Christmas game is a Friday.
Yeah. Yeah. We knew in 2020, that right? If we thought everything was going to be Thursday, Sunday, Monday in 2020, I think we would be incredibly naive. I think we have Joe Thomas on the line with us from NFL Network. He is an analyst for them. You can follow Joe on Twitter at JoeThomas73
And you can catch him this Thursday starting at 5 o'clock our time ahead of Thursday Night Football. Joe will be on NFL Network's NFL Game Day kickoff. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. By the way, let's just start there. Life after football, getting in this crazy business. How's it been so far?
Hello? Sorry, I lost you for a second.
Okay. I was going to say, let's just start their post-playing career, getting into this crazy business. How's it been?
Yeah. It's been great. You know, this is my third year doing Thursday Night Football. The first two were pretty much status quo. And then this year, COVID dropped a different bomb on us. And like you mentioned, I was supposed to do the game on Thursday, but that one got moved. Now I think we're dealing with potentially a Tuesday game as it stands right now. So we're just getting ready to kind of roll with the punches. We've been doing all of our pregame show stuff from the home office in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's definitely been a little bit different, but I think overall everyone has done a pretty good job finding a way to just deal with all the changes and just kind of roll with it and do everything we can to try to get the games off and give the fans something entertaining that they can get excited about and give them a little bit of a distraction from the normal craziness that's going on.
Yeah, you've probably had a lot of emails throughout the course of the season from the NFL Network that say TBD, to be determined on when this game will be played, when the kickoff, pretty crazy year. We were talking earlier, and you don't apply to this, but you played with guys that applied to this. You were picked very high in the first round. I think you were the second or third pick overall. But we were talking about DK Metcalf in the first segment of the show, his words after the game last night and how he's still using motivation. I mean, think about the season he's had and the young career he's had to this point. It looks very promising, and how he wanted to shine bright last night and ball out because the Eagles passed on him 2 years ago in the second round. And instead they took another wide receiver nobody's ever heard of, who's really been a bust to this point. And you're sitting there going, but DK, man, you made out. You went to Seattle. You're not playing for the Eagles. You're playing for the Seahawks. But clearly he's not wired like that. And so I just wanted to ask you, a guy who played in the league for a long time, you had to have played around guys like that in the room, right? Like I said, it doesn't apply to you, but those guys that were overlooked, picked late, undrafted, and even to this day, even when they've made it, they're still using certain things that have happened as motivation.
Yeah, I think that's what great competitors do, right? They find motivation in seemingly benign things. You think back to Tom Brady, even till this day, he finds motivation in the fact that he was one of the last quarterbacks picked in his draft, and now he's turned out to be probably the greatest NFL player of all time. So you got to find a way to continue to keep yourself motivated, even when you are at the top of the heap. And obviously DK Metcalf is playing some of the best football at the wide receiver position as anybody in the NFL. But when I think back to his draft class in 2019, he did a great job at the combine. And that's why I think some people kind of fell in love with him. He was a 4.3, 40 guy. He looks amazing when they do their posing on stage because he's 6'4", 230. But he wasn't super productive in college. His last year at Ole Miss, he only had 26 receptions. So it's easy for a GM to look at that and say, hey, is this the next DK Metcalf or is this Mike Mamula? I don't know if you guys remember him.
Oh, yeah.
But like, for every one guy like DK Metcalf who turns out to have a phenomenal NFL career after having a great combine and not so much success in college, there's 10 Mike Mamulas who blow it up at the combine, but they just have no ability to take raw talent and turn it on the football field. And good thing for the Seahawks that they got a guy who happens to look like Tarzan and not play like Jane. He goes out and he's been an incredible weapon for Russell Wilson this season and likely beyond. And even though we can all sit here and say, DK, come on, man, you can leave that grudge behind you. Those great competitors, they're going to hold on to that until they leave the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and probably beyond. So I was in Cleveland last year to open up the NFL season. I sat there and watched the Titans, especially in the second half. And that atmosphere there, this was obviously pre-COVID. It was sold out. I mean, the hype train was huge
for the Browns, right? They were the paper champions going into the season, and the Titans took it to them in the second half and beat them down. And we know how the rest of the season played out. What has changed this year? Obviously, they have a different head coach, but what has changed in your mind, Joe, where now we're talking about, you know, a matchup of 2-8-3 teams here in Nashville on Sunday?
Yeah, the Browns, they were a bunch of paper tigers last year. I was at that game, too, and there was a lot of preseason hype, and I think rightfully so. You know, the Browns have a ton of talent. They were coming off of a season for Baker Mayfield when he was a rookie, where he set the NFL record for touchdown passes in a season. It looked like he was trending in the right direction, and I think they got caught up in their own hype a little bit. I mean, that happens to a lot of teams in the NFL, and I think it certainly happened to the Browns last season, but they cleaned house, GM, coaching staff, brought in a new staff, and the staff that they got right now, I have a lot of respect for. They've done a tremendous job. Obviously, the Browns are 8-3 right now. Kevin Stefanski is the head coach. Andrew Berry is the GM. And it just seems like they brought in a staff that is all on the same page. They seem to have eliminated a lot of the drama that had plagued the Browns franchise for a long time. And I think they're getting the most out of these players right now. It's a scheme that I think Titans fans are going to be pretty familiar with when they see it. Because it's a lot like the scheme that Arthur Smith runs. It's a wide zone play action pass offense that's kind of in vogue right now in the NFL. I played for Kyle Shanahan in 2014 when he was the offensive coordinator for the Browns, and it's the same offense. It's a fun offense to watch. You guys got Derrick Henry. We got Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt. And it's a lot of fun. And I think when I look at these two teams offensively, they're actually pretty similar when you look at when Baker Mayfield and the offense for the Browns is at their best. It's a close game where they got a little bit of a lead. They're able to run the football. They're able to commit to the run and throw some of those play-action passes off of it. Where Baker struggles is when they're behind or he's forced to throw from in the pocket a lot. And I think to some level, that's how Ryan Tannehill is. He's at his best when it's a close game. He's able to run the football. He's able to throw his play-action pass. He's a little less than his best when he's forced to stand in the pocket and try to win the game like a Tom Brady or a Drew Brees. And so it'll be fun to kind of see the same two styles going at it on Sunday.
Joe Thomas on the line with us, NFL Network, former Browns, longtime offensive lineman, 10-time Pro Bowler. This year has been crazy for offensive line. And Taylor Lewan goes down, lost for the season. Tyson Morello is his replacement. He goes down. He's lost for the season. Enter David Quisenberry, who played last week for the first time. Three left tackles at this point in the season. Can you just talk about what's that like whenever players have to, you know injuries are inevitable in this sport, but now you've got, you know, injuries and COVID, and so there's a lot of moving parts, and what that's like when guys have to jump in there and fill in spots, whether it's 1 week, 4 weeks, or the rest of the season?
Yeah, it's really difficult because I would say the two position groups that rely the most on communication and being on the same page is your offensive line and it's your secondary. Obviously, in the secondary, when you're playing man coverage, you got to be able to pass off a lot of those rubs and a lot of those type of man coverage beater routes. You got to be able to communicate it. When you're playing zone, you got to communicate the shifts and the motions and make sure everybody's picking up the route concepts the right way, because when you screw it up, that's how touchdowns happen. You know, wide open guys running through your secondary, that's not a good thing, and that goes right back to communication. On the offensive line, it's even more catastrophic, because if you screw up the communication and you're not on the same page with all five offensive linemen, somebody's getting hurt, because you got some of the biggest, strongest people on earth on the defensive line. You look at a guy like Aaron Donald, he might be the biggest, strongest guy pound for pound on the face of the earth. And if you have a communication error and he runs into your backfield and hits your quarterback, that's a problem. That might be worse than just a day-to-day injury. And the same thing with your running back. The last thing you want when you got a stud like Derrick Henry is to be leaving guys free into the backfield to hit your best weapon before he gets a chance to get started. And so not having the same five guys play week in and week out is especially difficult, because you don't get the opportunity to get on the same page with the nonverbal communication. A lot of the things that you do as an offensive lineman are happening so quickly before the snap that you don't have time to play the game of telephone to pass a call on one way from one side of the line to the other. You're just up there at the line of scrimmage. If I'm the left tackle and the safety rolls down to my side, I'm just going to point out there and I might just yell, hey, and everybody knows and understands, because we've been playing together a long time, that now we got to take the slide to the left and pick up that safety off the edge. When you lose that familiarity with each other, those are the things that get lost, and it's the offense as a whole that suffers. But I think it's important to mention, too, obviously Taylor Lewan, in my opinion, one of the greatest left tackles in the game, and losing him is catastrophic. But the Browns stole one of your really good offensive linemen in the offseason in free agency with Jack Conklin. I love Jack Conklin as a right tackle. He was a phenomenal run blocker in the outside zone scheme that you guys run. And he's done a great job in Cleveland. So you guys are down two great offensive tackles from where you were last season. And for Derrick Henry to still be doing the job that he's doing, that is a testament to him. That's a testament to coaching staff and everybody on that offense to be able to play the way they are in spite of all the craziness of this season.
Talking to Joe Thomas, and Joe, you certainly know offensive line play. That was great detail that you gave on what makes the offensive line click. In your mind, let's take it to the next level. You mentioned Derrick Henry. He's doing so well right now, and this is usually the time of the year where he's at his best. So we're all asking the question, wondering, is he a true MVP candidate in your mind?
Well, I think he's definitely a candidate. Especially, it'll kind of come down to, in my opinion, how the season shakes out in the AFC. You know, Tennessee keeps playing the way they did last Sunday, keeps smashing folks like they did the Colts. You got to consider him an MVP candidate, because he's truly probably the most important cog on the team. That's one of the best teams in the NFL. And I think when you're an irreplaceable, one of the most important positions on your team, and your team is one of the best teams in the NFL, that's the recipe for MVP. Look at the other guys who are in that conversation right now. You know, Aaron Rodgers with the Packers. Packers, one of the best teams in the NFC. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. And then maybe you throw in Russell Wilson, or maybe somebody else kind of on the outside, maybe Nick Chubb, if the Browns keep playing and improving and finishing the way that they have been the last few weeks. I think there's a few guys, but definitely Derrick Henry absolutely should be in that conversation.
Well, you mentioned the issue with Baker Mayfield, and I think how he plays from here on out is going to determine a lot for the Browns. When does he really succeed, and what do defenses do when he struggles? Because that, you know, you look at him, I can think of games off the top of my head he's made a lot of mistakes, but as you've said, when he's at his best, he's really, really good.
Yeah, I think the thing he struggles with the most is throwing from in the pocket, and it's when he's getting pressure in the pocket and he's forced to reset his feet. One of the big issues he had last season was that offense he played in with Freddie Kitchens that asked him to throw from in the pocket a lot, and his footwork degraded for whatever reason. We don't have to get down that rabbit hole, but he didn't have very good footwork in the pocket, and it was causing his accuracy to slip. And I think while some of those issues have been improved this year a couple times, and it showed up last week, is when he gets that pressure and he's forced to reset his feet and he's not able to just throw in rhythm, he is reverting to some of the bad habits where he's not getting his feet underneath him, he's not throwing from a good base. And he's trying to kind of throw like Patrick Mahomes, where he drops his elbow and he's trying to fit it through little windows. And he just doesn't have the talent level of a Patrick Mahomes to throw accurately, consistently, when he's not using a good base throwing from in the pocket. And so for Baker, if it's a close game and the running game is able to work and he's able to do a lot of his rollouts and he rolls out to his left the best, which is kind of a big surprise, because usually right-handed quarterbacks struggle to bootleg or roll out to their left and throw back across their body. But Baker's very good at it. So if he's able to kind of continue those play action passes, those boots, he's a tough guy to beat. I think one thing that you see defenses do is they'll blitz the edges. So they'll blitz corners, they'll bring blitz nickels, they'll bring overload blitzes to the edge to try to stop Baker from being able to roll out and get to the outside to force quick throws. That's effective. However, it's a double-edged sword a little bit, because if the Browns are able to catch you in some of those blitzes and they're handing it off to Nick Chubb, they're able to coordinate the blocking on the inside and make sure everybody gets a hat for a hat. Like that, there are some huge holes in those defenses when you try to blitz a guy like Baker on the edge. And so for the Titans defense, I think they're probably going to be looking at, hey, what's the best blend that we can have of blitzing the edge to kind of keep Baker off his spot, to not let him break the contain, but also where we're not giving up 30 and 40-yard runs to Nick Chubb, because that's the quickest way to die against the Browns, is allow Nick Chubb to keep railing off 30 and 40-yard runs.
We're talking to Joe Thomas of the NFL Network, former Cleveland Brown as well. And Joe, the Titans' first-round draft pick, Isaiah Wilson, hit the field for the first time in his career last week in the victory formation. It's obviously been rough going for him, whether it's been off-the-field stuff or COVID or what have you. And whenever he's brought up, the head coach gets frustrated. You can tell there's just a lot of frustration within the organization of what's going on with the first overall pick. So as somebody that played on the offensive line, that was a tackle, had a leadership role, how would you address the first-round pick, Isaiah Wilson, and trying to get him right and to get him to be a part of this team?
Well, I think this season, more than any other, I think it's really important for everybody in the organization to have patience because of the lack of offseason that these guys had. You know, when you're learning to play offensive line, offensive tackle especially, you're being asked to do things that are not natural for the human body. You know, as a quarterback, you're throwing a football. Most kids have been throwing a baseball or throwing a basketball or throwing a pine cone at your brother or sister since you were a kid. So the throwing motion is pretty natural. When you're running and you're catching as a receiver or tight end, like, we've been running since we were little kids. We've been catching stuff our whole life. When you're an offensive lineman, you're basically, your feet are wider than your shoulders, which is pretty unnatural as it is. You're duck walking forward when you're trying to block people, and you're kick setting backwards when you're trying to pass block people. And at the moment of contact, you got to put your feet in the ground and not give up any ground and stop a 300-pound man that's trying to take your quarterback's head off. So you're doing things that are very unnatural, and so the only way you can get better at those unnatural things is with repetitions. And so when you lose your OTAs and your mini camp and most of your training camp, there's plenty of guys that just take a little bit more time learning with those repetitions to be able to get up to speed. And so I would urge the Tennessee Titans organization and Titans fans to just have patience with Isaiah. Do you wish that he was able to be a day one starter and to be able to step right in and play great football? Of course. But that doesn't mean that he won't figure it out. You know, I think in normal circumstances, it takes at least 2 years, maybe 3 years, before you really know what you're going to get with a first-round pick. And really, with COVID, you got to give him an extra maybe half a year because you just don't have a lot of reps. You're maybe at 25% of the number of reps right now as you normally would have by this point in a regular season because of the volume that you get in training camp and in the off season. So I think he's just a guy that it's just going to take a little bit longer. Have patience. Be tough on him. Maybe next season when he's in training camp and he's going through the preseason, and then maybe he's not living up to expectations. But as of right now, just have patience.
You mentioned Taylor Lewan earlier, who's somebody that whenever you talk about the Tennessee Titans offensive line, he always comes up because of the good things that he does. But you also have those guys on the O-line that they don't get a lot of praise. They don't get brought up a lot. Nate Davis is somebody that comes to mind for the Titans, who is only in his second year. He kind of had a rough start because of injury last season, but really made his own at the right guard position and has now become a solid player. How important are guys like that that, you know, you just don't bring up because they're doing their job and they just maybe don't get the praise for whatever reason or another?
One of the great things about Arthur Smith's scheme is if you're willing to be disciplined and you're willing to put in the time, the running schemes on the outside zone are the same thing over and over again. So the footwork is the same thing over and over again. And if you're willing to put in the time and practice to master the technique, and then you're willing to have the discipline to be able to execute the technique over and over and over again with military-like precision, you can take a player who's maybe not the most talented offensive lineman in the NFL, but you can plug him into that scheme and get really good success. You look back to the Broncos when they first started running the scheme when Mike Shanahan was there in the 90s. Their offensive line was five guys that probably couldn't have started anywhere else. They were 265, 270 pounds, but they were disciplined. They were hard-nosed. They were quick. They were willing to do the dirty work, and they were willing to do it over and over again. And I think in today's NFL, you can't just pay five offensive linemen the top salary at their position and have enough money left over for everybody else. So finding guys like Nate Davis, who went to Charlotte, and some of these other guys that maybe are not as well known, you get them into your system. you train them, you find those good offensive line coaches like the Titans have. And then if you get guys that, and you've done your homework as far as who they are as a person and their discipline and their willingness to go out and do some of the dirty work that offensive linemen do, you're able to get these guys that are really effective, that you can keep them around for a reasonable amount of salary. And then you do get those five guys that have been playing together for a long time that become a very, very good offensive line unit, and you don't have to break the bank with every single one of them. Obviously, a guy like Taylor Lewan, left tackle, one of them, you know, being a little biased that I am, being that I was a left tackle, you're probably going to have to pay him because of what he does in pass protection. But some of those other positions, to be able to find those bargains, to plug them in and to have them around for a long time, that's tremendously valuable to your football team.
When are you going to get in a Baker Mayfield commercial?
I don't know. He's got enough of them. I feel like
he's got a lot
out there that I'm in. Yeah, that
I love them too. They're hilarious.
They're funny. I tell you what, he's a pretty good actor. He does a really good job with those commercials, and I know he gets criticism because he hasn't always played the best. And when you're on TV every week, I'm sure that plenty of players in the NFL are like, "Why does this guy get all the good commercials?" But he does a really good job with them. They're pretty funny.
Good stuff, Joe. Really appreciate the visit. Good luck with Thursday night football, Tuesday night football, whatever night you're on. We have here on the NFL Network. We'll be watching. Thanks for doing this. It should be a fun one here in Nashville on Sunday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Go Brownies.
Oh, how about that? He ends on that, folks. You heard it. Joe Thomas, NFL Network analyst. Joe Thomas, or at Joe Thomas 73 on Twitter. Titans fans, you can go after him after that end right there. You just heard that. Go Brownies. And no Thursday night. It'll be, looks like, Tuesday with Ravens and Cowboys. So you can check him out there. That guy was, how long has he been retired? He hasn't been 5 years yet, right? Yeah, so
he's a Hall of
Famer. Is he first ballot?
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, I wasn't going to ask if he's a Hall of Famer. The question is he first ballot?
No doubt.
Yeah, I think so too.
I in fact, when you guys transitioned to me, I almost just, because it's in my head, I almost said Hall of Famer Joe Thomas. He's not there yet.
I was thinking that too. I was like, is he? I mean, because I think we all visualize him in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
first ballot, though, it, sometimes you'd have to look at who is eligible.
It's a whole weird thing.
So
about
I don't know
ballot.
If I would just jump out there and say first ballot without, because it can get a log jam.
But when have you ever heard anybody question anything about, right? It's just always been Joe Thomas. Oh, yeah, yeah, one of the best offensive linemen ever.
He's going to be in there eventually.
I feel like you're seeing more so, though, now that you're getting a different generation of voter, that a lot of these guys that are fresh out of the league that are no doubters, they're just going ahead and putting them in, which is going to create some issues because there's guys that have been waiting for a while and they deserve their chance. And so, you know, you're going to have to figure that part out. But I feel like there are some you can't pass. I mean, like, they have to go in. Like, when Peyton.
The way I look at it, there's no – look, there's very few first ballots that you have to be special, special, special. Why wait? I mean, just put them in. There's no reason to wait. Yeah, other people are waiting because they're not as – easy to decide on. They're not first ballot. They're not no-brainers. I mean, there has to be a real discussion.
Is he that much? Like, if he had played, if the Browns had played, you know, in several AFC championship games, then I think it would be
I don't think that has anything to do with it.
10-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro.
Yeah. The fact that he put
those. We're talking
those...
about first ballot. I'm not talking about whether he's a Hall of Famer. He's clearly a Hall of Famer. I'm just saying that I would have to look before I say first ballot of how many other people are out there, because I do think it does make a big difference. Unless you are Peyton Manning, it does matter who else is on that list.
I almost think it helps his case to be a first ballot even more because of all the crappy teams
that
he played on
all the crap.
And he still was an All-Pro. He still was a Pro Bowler.
And still was viewed as the best left tackle in the game on the worst team in the league.
Oh, and by the way, he didn't miss a snap.
First ballot, there's a little more of a variable there.
That's not true. I think he got hurt in a Titans game.
He did, but that's what I'm saying. He didn't miss a snap until the end of his career.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that
in fact,
was it.
I think it was 2017. Yeah. I think it was Arakpo, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I can't remember if he retired after that or if he came back for one more year. But I mean, that was at the end of his career. I mean, he holds the record for, I mean, it was like an ungodly amount of snaps that he played consecutively in his career. 10,363 consecutive snaps longest streak in the NFL. And that was until 2017, his final season. So that was his last season when that happened.
All right, we'll come back. Speaking of Hall of Fame, Segway, Rick Byrd, we told you yesterday, is going to be in the 2021 College Basketball Hall of Fame. Wow. So cool of an honor and so deserving. We'll talk to Rick Byrd to start the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
But first, let me tell you about BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. They're helping new customers celebrate the holiday season with instant match. You need to sign up. This is a great deal. I've been telling you about it. I've been winning. You've been winning. But if you haven't jumped on yet, go with Instant Match. Sign up today. Get your first deposit instantly doubled with up to $500 in free bets when you use the bonus code INSTANT1025GAME. That's INSTANT1025GAME. Then get ready to enjoy your favorite sports like you never have before, just like I have. And you have boosted odds specials, parlay selection tools, daily promotions, and much more. Plug into pro and college football action with the same people that light up the Las Vegas Strip with the most popular sports books and casinos. Download the BetMGM app today or go to BetMGM.com. Use the bonus code INSTANT1025GAME to get your first deposit matched up to $500 in free bets. Happy holidays from BetMGM, where you're always just one click away from your victory dance all year long. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years or older. Must be present in Tennessee. For gambling problem support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.